Hello and welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray. He's Stevie Nicol. We'll also be joined by Frank Leboeuf and Jules Laurent. I'll be talking Kylian Mbappe, Antoine Griezmann and some VAR decisions at Euro 2020. But let's start with the latest news on Kylian Mbappe. This is the front page of Diario AS today in Spain. It says that Mbappe is waiting for a sign. He's hoping that Real Madrid will come in before August the 1st and before he starts playing this season with PSG. There's 1 year left on his contract and Madrid are said to be preferring to wait until 2022 and to not cause any problems in the relationship that the club does have with PSG. Now, we know that Jules is off on his holidays, but I do wonder, Jules, when you come back, do you expect Kylian Mbappe to have signed an extension with PSG?
Why are you doing this to me? I'm going away tomorrow on holidays. The last thing, now I'm going to think about it all the time on holidays. I was trying to distance myself from Kylian Mbappe and all those talks. And thank you for bringing it back on the last night before my holidays, Kay. I mean, I won't forget it. What can I say? Listen, he was at Marco Verratti's wedding last night, on Thursday night. He took a private jet to go back to his holidays straight after. I think right now he's far from thinking about PSG, Real Madrid, where will I play? Next season, he will be in Paris. I can guarantee you that he's not going to sign for anybody this summer. He might not sign an extension anytime soon either. This is the thing. He still wants time to think about what to do. We know that there's a few things. First of all, he wants a very competitive team in Paris, and you can argue that PSG are doing that right now with the signings that they've made. Wijnaldum, Donnarumma, Sergio Ramos, you know, being obviously, and Hakimi being some excellent players. So this team is much better than the one he had in the last two, three, four seasons since he's been at the club. Financially, I think PSG are going to offer him already on the table. There's a big contract. There's a question about maybe them even bumping that contract offer. So that's not a problem either. I think in his mind, he's 22 years of age. He's just finished the Euros. He wants to take time to relax and recover. And then he will think about it again in August, in September. He feels there's no rush to sign an extension or not sign an extension. He wants to focus on his holidays right now and then focus on the start of the season. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, now you do wonder with Kylian Mbappe as well if he should just stick around a little bit longer to see how successful that team could be with all those players. Anyway, Nicolas Anelka thinks that he does need to leave PSG and go to Real Madrid. He said if you want the biggest accolades, you'll have to move from PSG at some point. Somebody will always say, well, you did great for PSG, but it was only in France. The best leagues are in England and Spain. If you want to win the Ballon d'Or, you will have to compete with the best. You can't say you compete with the best of all time when you're at PSG, and these quotes coming from The Athletic. Is that still the case, though, with who PSG is signing, Frank? With everybody that they've got, do you not think that they could be competing for the biggest prizes?
Definitely, Kay. I think Nicolas is making that comment according to what he knew and the time he was playing football, but the football has changed, especially last season with that dramatic COVID and all the finances crisis that clubs have been through. When you play for the richest club in the world, that would be a competition between Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain, saying that you can become the biggest club in the world, even if it's in France, why do you want to leave that club to play? And with all due respect for that fantastic club, which is Real Madrid, why do you want to go there where they're struggling, where they cannot pay you, where I would say some of the best players, like Sergio Ramos, for example, is leaving the club? Why do you want to go there where you can see that many, many talented players are coming to Paris Saint-Germain, that is going to be competitive, that, yes, it's in France, but there is maybe two or three clubs who can win the Champions League next season, and definitely Paris Saint-Germain is one of them. So I will go against Nicolas, and I will say that there is no way for Mbappe to go elsewhere if he has the challenge to win the next Champions League.
What do you think, Stevie? Do you think that it's just that Kylian Mbappe has got these blinkers on and he just sees Real Madrid and that's that?
I think that's part of it, but you'd have to say that he is in such a fantastic position. You know, we're talking about PSG strengthening all around him. That'll be a selling point for him to maybe sign an extension or even a new contract. But if I'm him, I'm going, well, hold on a second. All these parts that they've signed, I stay here next year, we win the Champions League, and my dream has always been to play at Real Madrid. I'll go to Real Madrid with the Champions League in my pocket. It also gives Real Madrid a chance to retool, because they need to. They need to make a lot of signings. And the fact that they don't have to shell out a huge amount of money, because they said that they're not going to do it, because of the they're such good friends with PSG. Yeah, right. As if they care one iota about anybody. This suits them down to the ground. The money that they would use on Mbappe, they can use to strengthen the team for Mbappe coming next year on a free transfer. He's in a great spot.
Is there not a fear, though, for Real Madrid that it could work out all so well at PSG, Jules, that maybe Mbappe would decide to stick around?
Yeah, I think so. Although, we all know, let's be honest here, that he's not going to stay there for the next 10 years. This is not the plan. The plan was to, first of all, to stay in Monaco a bit longer. Monaco decided to sell. He didn't want to go to Real Madrid 4 years ago when he was still only 18, going into 19. So he said, hey, Paris would be great for a few years. We are into those few years. I think he was so close to winning the Champions League that he would be disappointed so far that he hasn't won it yet with PSG. But he also knows that he can stay two more years and he will only be 24. And at 24, he will have every big club ready to sign him. Real Madrid, Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United, Juventus, whoever will have that kind of money, whether he's on a free or not, he will be there. So I think in his head, he knows he can extend and have a new short deal. He can just sign a new two-year deal, for example, and be contracted until 2024. And then in a year time or even 2 years time, he goes, you know what? I've given you 6 years. It's been great. Maybe by then he would have won the Champions League. He might have won another World Cup. A lot of things could happen. He said, now is the time. And PSG would say, you know what? You gave us the Champions League. This is great. Now you can go. And they would get a good money for him and what they deserve. But nothing crazy like they would ask for now if he was trying to force a move. So it's hard to tell, but certainly I can see him extending the deal, but a short deal, and then having some sort of gentleman agreement with PSG saying, hey, listen a minute, let's say in a year's time, maybe we would have won the Champions League and then you can open the door, or in 2 years' time. He's still so young. He's got all the time in the world to go to Liverpool or Real Madrid or whoever else he wants after one more, maybe two more years with PSG.
One player who doesn't seem to be sticking around at the club that they're at, Jules, is Antoine Griezmann, although it's said that the latest move here in this swap deal with Barcelona, with Saul going the other way and him going back to Atleti, is getting complicated, even though the clubs are said to be in advanced talks. A report in Sport, though, in Barcelona, their newspaper, said that Antoine Griezmann knows there's no turning back and that he will be going and leaving Barcelona. What percentage chance do you see him going back to Atleti?
Well, I would say 50-50 right now, but we explained on the show yesterday how complicated those deals are, because it's not just swapping pretty much a player for another player, Saul going one way, Griezmann going the other way. It's also making this deal, which is completely legal, but to boost their books and to boost the accounts. So you overprice if you want, you overpay for those players, but because you both do it, it's fine in the end. The problem and why is this deal so complicated is Griezmann's wages. He earns 36 million gross a year, which means that he's got 3 years left on his contract. That's 108 million euros in the next 3 years. If Barcelona really think that he would go to Atletico for half that amount and forget about the 108 million that he would be earning in the next 3 years at Barcelona, they're crazy, because he's not going to do that. So all of them will have to find a way for Griezmann not to lose that on money, because Griezmann is not stupid. He's going to say, hang on a minute, okay, maybe you don't want me anymore, but I don't want to lose any of the money that I've signed for 2 years ago on my deal. So find a way for me to get those 108 million or something similar at Atletico Madrid, or I'm not going anywhere. And he would have a point. Why would he turn his back on all that money that Barcelona agreed to pay him over 5 years? So I think it's very complicated, because on the other hand, Saúl Ñíguez, who would go the other way, earns 6 million a year. 36 million, 6 million. So Griezmann's saying, like, hang on a minute, it doesn't add up.
Yeah, obviously a big difference there. Frank, what would you do if you were Antoine Griezmann?
You know, I love football and I play football without thinking of how much money do I need to feel comfortable, you know, for maybe 200 and 300 years. Because I know that I won't live that long. But even for my kids, my grandkids and my grand-grandkids, I think the most important thing for Antoine Griezmann is to know how much he needs in his post-life of football and how much he wants to play football and enjoy football. I didn't see Griezmann enjoying football since he signed for Barcelona because of the competition with Messi and other, you know, effects, which made, I think, his football getting a little poorer than it was, or less exciting for him and for the rest of the world. He's a fantastic player. He has to find a club. And even if he has to be paid less, he should be happy because he plays football. I think that guy is so rich, like many of them. We talked about Ronaldo when I was in the studio with you, who doesn't want to go elsewhere for free, for no money, where he knows that Juventus cannot pay him for one last year when he is with $1 billion in his bank account. So I don't understand football nowadays. I don't know what is the goal of the players nowadays, if it's only to make it bigger and bigger in their bank accounts, or it's only enjoying playing football for a competitive club. I don't know. I would be Griezmann. I will. Yeah, go on. Yeah,
no, I'm just laughing. Stevie's laughing at this situation.
Frank, are you a romantic or what?
Because
I don't care. I just want to play football.
No, I'm not a romantic.
Stevie, I'm not a romantic. Problem, though, is
I know.
It?
I know.
The financial situation Barcelona find themselves in isn't Griezmann's problem, is it?
Oh, yes, of course, it's Griezmann's problem, and he can deal with that. But the thing is, he's 28, I think, or 29.
Yeah. 30.
I think he has three, four 30. Years more to play and to enjoy. That's important as well. I'm not a romantic. I know money talks. I know that it's a business. But at the end of the day, when he will be 34 and will be sitting on $100 or $200 million in his bank account, he's going to go back and say, well, you know, I would have loved to play, you know, between 28 and 32 for a good club that I would have enjoyed. That's it. That's only what I'm saying. If he just won the money, fine by me. I didn't see that. When I left Chelsea, I lost 4 times on my wage just to go back to see my father because he was about to die, but also because I thought I needed to play. Because Chelsea wouldn't have given me the time that I would have played because John Terry was coming up. I thought about football. I didn't think about money. So if it's that, being a romantic, I'm a huge romantic.
No, he definitely is. I think when you get older, you become more sensible and you start thinking about things like that. You know, I'd rather play football. And how much is enough money? Well, the truth is, who... at 30 years of age, is thinking like that. You know, Frank's saying there he did. Well, I'll tell you what, he's on an island on his own. Because that's not... And at the end of the day, Griezmann doesn't owe Barcelona anything. If Barcelona can half his wages, even if Atleti only take half of it, they're still ahead of the game. So, listen, Frank, there is no way he's going to turn round and say, I just want to play football, it doesn't matter about the money. That's not happening.
More from these guys on Extra Time, and you can always catch the latest edition of Extra Time on YouTube for these guys to answer your questions.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
As a head of UEFA referees, Roberto Rossetti, this is him defending the penalty decision for Raheem Sterling in that semi-final against Denmark. He says it was not a scandal. The defender didn't play the ball. Clear contact of the right leg against the right leg of Sterling. We can discuss about the intensity of the contact, but this is what the referee saw. And the VAR confirmed the decision because of the images. We don't want soft penalties, and I want to confirm this also for the future. UEFA wants serious penalties, serious clear penalties. In this situation, there was a clear action of the defender. And this continues. This was the VAR referee for the decision, Paul van Berkel, who says, from one camera angle, I see that there is a clear contact between defender and attacker. I think the penalty has been severely punished. Let me say that, but I have to support the referee's decision. Football isn't tennis, where a ball is in or out. You have to deal with a grey area. It feels as though we'll be continuing to talk about this for a while, Stevie. Now they've come out and defended this decision with all that time, and I know that you were talking yourself about how you and the guys here had to see it over and over again.
Yes.
So what have you made of their latest comments?
In a shock move, the referees have given ourselves a pat on the back. Well done, lads, we got everything spot on. Well, the truth is, if the rules that they followed, they did get it spot on. The problem is the rule's wrong. You know, the rule is, if the referee gives a penalty and there's contact, the way that they were going about refereeing and doing the VAR meant that they couldn't go and change the referee's decision. That's where the problem is. Whether there's contact or not, he's talking about the amount of contact. Surely that's what the game's about, because it is a contact sport. So if the contact is minimal, then why is it a free kick or a penalty? But if somebody's barging around, smashing into people, that's why contact can be a free kick or a penalty kick. So you've basically taken that out of the game. That's what they've done.
As per our Dale Johnson at ESPN, they say that he likes VAR to run with a light touch on subjective calls. Getting the balance right on that and the intervention point for clear and obvious is one of the biggest challenges. I think that's fair to say, isn't it, Jules?
Yeah, it is. I think Dale explained it well. And we also heard in that the sort of Zoom press conference that Rossetti gave after the tournament that Gab was on, by the way. We heard the discussion, albeit in Dutch, between Danny McKinley, the referee, and then the people in the VAR. And clearly, McKinley says, I saw the contact. The VAR said, yeah, we can tell you there's contact. My issue is, like Stevie said, why is the VAR not saying, but listen, it was a really soft contact. Maybe you should come and have a look from the angles that we have. Come and have a look at the screen and decide by yourself if you think there was enough contact there to keep the pen, or if, like us, maybe you think it's too soft and it should not be a pen. And that's the issue I have. It would have cost you nothing to go and have a look at the screen. Then, as we've said on the night, there was no way they were going to change the decision that McKinley made. Had McKinley not given the pen, again, the VAR would not have overturned it as well. They would have gone along with the decision. So, just tell him, go and have a look, it's soft, but if you think it's not soft enough, then keep the pen, no problem. But it would have taken him a minute to go and have a look at the screen. That's why I still don't get it.
Should we be surprised, Frank, that this is the statement that we've seen from both of them?
Of course not. As Stevie said, you know, the backup every one of them, and it's very sad, because the first sentence when he said, this is not a scandal. Ask the Danes what they think about that, if it's not a scandal. And then, I just have a question. Why 99% of the former player who work now on every broadcast in the world have said that wasn't a penalty? Why? Except maybe Shaka Hislop and Tim Howard. But the rest of the world said there wasn't a penalty. That must be a reason why. And enough reason to maybe try to understand better the football. They don't understand it. They don't feel it. When he say that the right leg of the defender touched the right leg of Raheem Sterling, I don't agree with that. Because I think Raheem Sterling put his leg towards the right leg of the defender to make sure the contact exists, to exaggerate the contact. But if you didn't never played football or never played at a certain level, you won't get that. And that's very sad. And that have to be improved. Well, it's not a big deal, because at the end of the day, only the Danes will feel sorry. England didn't win the Euros, so it won't go that far. But I'm fed up to see those kind of things. And I'm fed up to see, after a competition, people backing each other up just for the sake of it, just to say, oh, no, we're good. We did well. No, you didn't do well. Stevie, you did wrong.
This is very simple to change. You know, I started off by saying that the way it's set up is if the referee gives the penalty and there's contact, then they can't touch it. You can very easily change that. We see linesmen with clear offsides who don't put the flag up because they've been told, don't give it, let's see what happens, and if there's a goal, then we can get VAR involved. All the referee has to do is the same thing. Don't give the penalty, and then as soon as the ball's out of play or play stopped, or VAR wants to stop it, then they get involved. That's all you have to do. It's not a case of changing 35 rules and A, B, C, and D. That's it, in a nutshell. You do it with linesmen, do it with referees.
Well, the referees may have given themselves a pat on the back here, but I don't think Gavin Jules will be giving them any awards in their Euro 2020 awards special. It's the latest podcast. Nadim is also on there with them. It includes an 11 of the tournament, Messi's latest contract talk, and which player could replace Gini Wijnaldum at Liverpool. And make sure you listen to this because it's the last one for a while these two go on holiday. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Head over to our website for this story from Caitlin Murray on the Olympics and whether it's too easy for the US women's national team. You can see it's over there on ESPN FC. And the men were in Gold Cup action last night too with a 6-1 win over Martinique. There's a brace from Daryl DK among those goals, and it means the USA qualify for the knockout stages with their second win in as many games. Hercules Gomez joins us now to discuss this and more. So, Herc, what did we learn from last night's win?
We learned that Martinique isn't very good. You can take away some individual performances, but to really grade the team or even set players in a game where they score 6 goals, it's difficult because oftentimes in games like this, you try things you don't normally try because the opposition isn't very good, because you can pad the stats, because you can get away with it. And you do things that sometimes cause bad habits. But all in all, this was a good performance. These were a bunch of players that fans have been clamoring for, that they wanted to see. Players like Gianluca Busio, players like Eric Williamson, Daryl Dike, who scored a brace, who could have easily had 4, maybe even 5. Joe Achini, Matthew Coppi. It was a young team. I mean, going into this Gold Cup, 12 of these players on this roster hadn't played a single minute with this national team. So it was good to see which players were up for the challenge. But apart from that, I mean, it was a win they should have got. I don't think even the players or Greg Berhalter knew that they could maybe pad the stats or come away with the win that was this emphatic. And proof of that is after the 6th goal, you're going to see Greg Berhalter realize that they're 1 goal away from leading the group in a goal differential, and he's pleading with his men, he's pleading with the players to hurry up and go for the 7th goal. Why? Because if you have that goal lead in goal differential heading into that Canada game, it's no longer a must-win game. Now you can tie and go in first place into what is the next round in the knockout rounds and potentially avoid Mexico in the semifinals. So all to play for now against Canada. But if we're going to talk about what we learned, we learned that some of these players are up for the moment at the Gold Cup level.
Okay, just quickly then, because you did mention it's the young, fun team. Any player that stood out for you?
Yeah, Daryl Dike. He's just turned 21 years of age. I just mentioned he could have scored maybe 4, maybe even 5 on the night. He's a player that they've been limiting his limits in Gold Cup. But every time you see him play, whether that's Orlando City, Barnsley when he was on loan at the championship level, or back now again with Orlando, or the U.S. men's national team when he's played in his limited time, he impresses. He's got all the physical traits about him that just look obvious and are there. He's strong, he's powerful, the pace, all that, but he's intelligent in the final third. He's opportunistic, uses his body well. He combines surprisingly well with his teammates, and he's hungry. He's one of these players that gives you an effort on both ends of the field. I came away impressed with him, and there were actually Manchester United scouts there yesterday at this game. You ask yourself why. Why would they come to a Gold Cup game versus Martinique? Why would they come see a C team for what is this Gold Cup for the U.S. men's national team? Well, it's players like Daryl Dike and that promise that he has.
Now, we've just seen Euro 2020 finish, Herc, and obviously we're in the Gold Cup right now. Copa America's just finished. We know back in 2016 in the Centenario, the two came together, CONMEBOL and CONCACAF. There's been some talk of whether that should happen more often. What are your thoughts on it to make it maybe more interesting?
Absolutely. Let's just talk about Gold Cup for a second. You see this Gold Cup and what you can actually win and what you get out of it. I mean, so much so that Greg Berhalter said, you know what, I'm going to leave my star players at their clubs to do preseason. No Weston McKennie, no Christian Pulisic, no Tyler Adams, no Zach Steffen, et cetera, et cetera. I'd rather see these players focus on winning a spot on their team in their respective club seasons. He sent out a C team. You don't get that half a ticket or that ticket to what is a Confederations Cup for winning. The prize money isn't that great. So oftentimes teams don't take it as seriously. The players don't take it as seriously about going. They choose to not go. Keylor Navas doesn't participate in what is the Gold Cup. But if we're talking Centenario, like that 2016 tournament, that Copa America that's over 100 years old, that when it came to the United States and had the Centenario combined tournament, broke records, viewership records, attendance records. It had an average attendance of each game of over 40,000 spectators per game there. It's just a no-brainer. When you look at the CONMEBOL qualifying, it's 10 teams, and these 10 teams always seem to play each other. When you look at what's Copa America, I mean, you went through a whole round, 20 games to eliminate two teams, Venezuela and Bolivia, to then do it again. It just seems redundant. It seems like there's a lack of interest for what is a sector that, one, has great stars, and two, there is a market for. You look at the combined market of North America, if you include Canada, if you include the States, if you include Mexico, to what is Copa America and those teams, Brazil, Argentina, and its figures like Messi and Neymar, it's a no-brainer. I think it makes sense on many levels. And if you want to rival what the Euros are, which would be very difficult because that's going to be the best tournament when it comes to playing football at the national team level, not the World Cup. It's going to be the Euros for the amount of quality that they will have. If you want to rival that, don't make it a 10-man tournament that's the same thing as qualifying in Copa America, and don't make it a diluted Gold Cup where some teams aren't even interested in sending out their best team.
Yeah, and obviously with the Copa America, you're having to invite teams to make up the numbers. What do you think, Steve? Is it a no-brainer for you as well?
Well, it is a no-brainer. And quite frankly, everybody knows from a competitive standpoint it would be better. But guess what? Somebody's going to lose out financially. That's the only reason. And I'm going to guess that it's CONCACAF teams. Otherwise, this tournament would happen. So it's got nothing to do with what's best for football. It's got nothing to do with anything other than money. And I'm willing to bet my mortgage that somebody's not going to get a big enough share of the pie, and that's why they don't do it. No other reason.
What would you say about that, Jules? Do you think that's the reason that they're not doing this?
I think that could be a reason, although I'm sure that if we get a joint tournament, Mexican television, we pay more money to have this super new tournament involving Mexico and Argentina and Brazil and Chile and all those teams. Same with US televisions as well. So you can expect the TV right money to go up, which means more money to spread between all those teams. For me, I agree with the boys. It's a no-brainer, 100%. And this is the time to do it now. You could have the 10 South American teams. You can have Mexico and the US, and then the other four spots, let's say, to make it 16, the other four spots. You have a little tournament between the other CONCACAF teams, and then you get four of that tournament and you have 16, and it makes far more sense for everyone to have that kind of competitiveness, to have more games that actually are a value, because as Herc said, this Copa America is a wonky format. You know, you go into the group stages just to eliminate two teams. It makes no sense whatsoever, although we watch it, but it makes no sense. 16 teams, it makes far more sense for everyone, probably potentially more money, and certainly far interesting for the fans, for the players, for the managers, for TVs, for everyone.
I think Jules just answered my question, or my point. Because if you're only going to take four over to come the ball, hold on a second, all these other teams that are going to play in this, even though Gold Cup is a Mickey Mouse tournament, this is going to be a double Mickey Mouse without the US and without Mexico. And so they're going to get no money. Nobody's going to be interested. Nobody's going to go it. TV companies are not going to buy it. So there's your answer, because then all those federations are part of CONCACAF and they won't be given any vote. They're going to come a ball.
That's the issue, isn't it, Stevie? That's always seems to be the issue when it comes to splitting up. How do you split up the pie? How do you divide that pie? Because if you look at Libertadores, which is probably the biggest tournament at the club level in this hemisphere, the reason that Mexican clubs don't go isn't because they haven't done well in this tournament. It's because television rights, the split of the pie, the amount of money. And if we look at Copa America Centenario, I mean, the U.S. Soccer Federation made a net profit of $46 million. So if you're CONMEBOL, you're thinking, hold on a second. This is all good, but I don't want this much of my pie going over here. So I'll keep it here. I will keep it here, and don't worry about attendance. Don't worry about which teams are in. And it's business as usual. Nothing happens because I'm going to make the money for us. We're going to make the money and not split it up. Because if you have Mexico and you have the U.S., which are huge markets, television markets, that pie, that slice gets reduced.
Money talks, eh? Let's talk a little MLS then, because coming up tomorrow, it's Atlanta United against New England. Bit of drama at Atlanta United. That game's 5 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Gabriel Heinze has frozen out one of the league's best players in Joseph Martinez. When asked if it was disciplinary, he said, "I have my reasons, and I'm very clear on those reasons." Herc, what in the world is going on here?
I wish I could tell you. This screams Jozy Altidore and Chris Armas in that Toronto FC situation. But at least we knew. At least there was transparency there. It was Jozy Altidore and Chris Armas having some words after he took Jozy Altidore out in a match in Orlando when they were down a goal, and he takes out a nine instead of keeping two nines. And there was a discussion there. And at least you knew what was going on. This is pretty much Gabriel Heinze, who, as we well know, who was a very polemic figure, or at least I should say fiery figure in his playing career, putting his foot down and saying, it's not fitness related. It's my decision. So now he's putting the onus on him, but he's not telling us what it is. Joseph Martinez himself hasn't come out and really spoken about it. Eels or Carlos Bocanegra, the brass at Atlanta United, haven't said anything. All we see are Joseph Martinez liking tweets about kicking Gabriel Heinze off the team and how he's beloved with the team. There seems to be something going on. We don't know what it is, but he came back from Copa America for that COVID protocol, and as soon as he was ready to play, he was separated from the team. Listen, more will unfold because these things usually unfold, but Stevie can tell you, as a manager, if there's a situation where you separate somebody from the team, it's because you think they're not good for the team. It's because you had an altercation with this person, or somebody in your staff had an altercation with this person. He just ostracized their biggest figure, their biggest star, one of the faces of Major League Soccer, a player who's won everything with Atlanta United.
Yeah, obviously. Look out for those Twitter likes as well, because I don't think they're going to do too much for Joseph Martinez right now against his coach. Herc, always great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us. You can catch Herc and Sebastian Salazar every Monday and Thursday on Football Americas on ESPN Plus for more topics like this. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. La Liga is back, and you can see every game here on ESPN+. Plus, the new fixtures have been released for match day one. It all gets underway on August 13th. Defending champions Atleti, they'll be away to Celta. Real Madrid are also on the road. They'll be taking on Alaves. And Barcelona will host Real Sociedad at the Camp Nou. Gareth Bale, it's his birthday today, 32 years old. And lots of talk about him in the coming season, because Carlo Ancelotti has said that he's coming back. I know him well. He'll be motivated to play better and have a great season. So could this be Gareth Bale back to his best at Real Madrid under Carlo Ancelotti?
Why?
Why not?
Why has Carlo Ancelotti got a wee magic wand? They can just go like that and go 2016-17, Gareth Bale. No, listen, Gareth Bale is past his best. Some would say him being past his best is better than most. But the truth is, at Real Madrid, with the reputation he has now with the fans and the public, he has to get away from there. I'm not so sure this works at all. Yes, Angelotti's going to give him a chance. But really, do you think it's going to all turn out roses and back to the Gareth Bale we all loved and saw in 2015-16? It's just not happening. The guy's not going to end up playing again. And by the way, he has to stay fit to play. That's questionable as well.
With the current climate we're in, though, you can understand, Frank, why Carlo Ancelotti would be wanting to get the best out of a player like Gareth Bale.
Oh, yes, because of the past and because of the crisis, the economical crisis, you have to have a very good Gareth Bale to make one member on top of the others, to make sure that you going to be decent next season with Real Madrid. But I'm with Stevie. I mean, that would be a fantastic miracle to see him going back to what he showed, you know, in the past. So I won't be long. I will wish him a happy birthday. And let's see tomorrow what's going on.
What do you think, Jules? Do you believe that Ancelotti does see a future there for him?
Well, the thing we know for sure is that Gareth Bale is not going to go anywhere. He's got 1 year left on his contract on €60 million net a year. No one is going to pay that. No one is going to buy him or have a transfer fee or anything. So he will be there. Why not have a go? If there's one manager who, one, knows him well, I mean, they won the Champions League together. I know it was 7 years ago at Real Madrid, but they still did it. And if there's one manager who's really good at management, who can relaunch careers, that's Carlo Ancelotti. So have a go. It costs you nothing. He will be there. He will be part of the squad. See what his mindset is. See if he really wants to. See if he's motivated. See if he's fit. And then see what happens. The thing is, and the good thing for Gareth Bale is that in his absence, kind of a long absence, but absence, no one really has stepped up on that right-hand side. Asensio is still far too inconsistent. Rodrigo, Vinicius, all of them are still very young. Hazard would probably be on the left-hand side if he's fit. Then you've got Karim Benzema, and then you've got that right-hand side. So I guess if it's Carlo Ancelotti, you know you've got nothing to lose. Try it, give it a go, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter. He can go back on the bench, in the stands, half asleep, on the golf course, whatever, but at least you would have tried to just relaunch his career a little bit, or what is the end of his career.
He is only 32 today, Stevie, and this would be him back under a coach in Carlo Ancelotti that he's won big with. Why wouldn't it work out? We see Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, and we're talking about contract extensions there for them and them continuing to deliver. Well, this is relatively young, 32 now.
The injuries he's had for a guy who's 32, I mean, seriously? This is two things. It's absolutely 50-50. 50% of it, can he be fit? That is extremely questionable. And the other is, can he perform on the field? Because he hasn't done that either. So you think all of a sudden, as I said, there's this magic wand that's going to bring those two things together to see the Gareth Bale of old. It just seems unlikely.
Well, Carlo Ancelotti, he is the big star whisperer. That's what we did see during his time there. Maybe he will. Anyway, talking about Spurs players, Harry Kane is a Tottenham player, according to the new coach, Nuno Espirito Santo. He said he's our player, no need to talk about anything else, period. I guess that's that then, Jules. He's staying.
If only it was that simple, Kay. You know, I think Nuno would be loving it. The thing is, Nuno hasn't spoken to Harry Kane yet. Harry Kane is on holidays for a while now, and we just don't know what will happen when he comes back. Will he want to move so badly that he can almost try to force it, you know, send a transfer request, not wanting to train with the first team. I don't know. There's a lot of things that he can do as a player. We've seen him. We've seen it in the past. I don't think Harry Kane is that kind of guy, but you don't know. And for what we know, Man City might bring another offer on the table, more money than the 100 million that they were kind of keen to offer only a few days ago. So a lot of things can still happen. But Nuno has to say that. It's his first press conference. Of course, there were questions about Kane. He had to come out and say something like this, but he knows he's been in the game too long. We've all been. He knows that he's been far more complicated than this, and this is going to be a long saga.
Stevie, the player did reiterate his desire to leave Spurs before the Euros. Must he try and force his way out?
I think he's going to have to, because it doesn't look as though Levy's going to let him go, unless there's a crazy bid. And normally I would say, A, why are you keeping a player that doesn't want to be there? And how do you expect a player to then turn around and perform? That's what I would normally say. The truth is, there have been a couple recently. You think of Coutinho at Liverpool, who was told, look, give us another year. And that year that he said, OK, he was fantastic. And then you look at Messi. I said after Messi and Barcelona, when Barcelona turned around and went, oh, by the way, we're not letting you go now. We're going back on our word. I thought, there's no way he's going to be able to have the heart to stomach being treated the way he is. And if Messi can be treated that way, nobody else has got a chance. But now, Messi's just signed a 5-year deal. I'm not sure what way to go, to be honest with you. But if Harry wants out, he's going to have to create.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to follow. And you can do that on our website. Lots of transfer talk over on ESPN FC segment on ESPN.com. Make sure to check it out daily for all the latest transfer rumours.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
I'll be back on tomorrow's show. We'll have much more football talk for you. Don't forget, ESPN FC is available daily. Shaka and Nadim will be joining me to talk about all the latest news, transfer rumours too. But we do thank you for joining us for the latest edition from myself and from Stevie. We do ask you to stick around as well, because coming up on Extra Time, we're going to find out about Stevie's passion for Formula One. Into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Stevie, Jules and Frank are with us, and we're actually surprised that Jules is still with us, as is son M. He's in saying, Jules, spending vacation on Extra Time, very cool.
I love you too much, guys. I can't say no, you know me. So, you know, when Pete, our producer, said, hey, can you come on tonight? I said, like, of course. Kay would be there, of course. Stevie, of course. Frank, okay, yeah, no problem.
Honestly, I said to Jules, where are you going on vacation, right? And he went, France. He comes from France.
Is it not a vacation, going back home to see family and friends?
I live in London.
If I walked through the door and said to my wife, I nearly said my girlfriend there, though. If I went and walked through the door and said to my wife, I've booked us a holiday, she'd be like, yes, where are we going? If I went to Scotland, she'd be like that.
Well, it depends where it is in Scotland and France, doesn't
Anywhere in Scotland.
Well, OK, but it's different going back to France, maybe the south of France, than it is into Scotland, right?
It was like, well, it's like the north, south, east and west in Scotland as well, you know. I wouldn't go to one of them.
I was just using an area as an example that wouldn't be such a hardship to be going to, even if I was from that country.
Well, it doesn't matter where you go in Scotland, it rains everywhere, so it doesn't matter.
So there's the difference. where exactly. Are you going, Jules?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
I'm going on Ile de Ré, which is a small island off La Rochelle on the Atlantic coast of France. So it's like it's heaven on earth. So it's perfect.
Well, that sounds better.
Is that okay, Stevie?
Yeah, that sounds a bit better.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? You know why you go there, Kay? He goes there because you have all the Parisians going there. So he's going to talk about Paris Saint-Germain. It's why he's going to Île de Ré.
What about
for
you,
the rich
Frank?
People, you know, living in Paris, going on holidays on the island.
Where are you going to be vacationing, Frank?
We are going to Greece with my lovely wife, and 2 days in Athens and some days in a little bit south after. So it's going to be chill out by the beach.
Very nice, very nice. You deserve it. Andrew's it, and they say, Frank, how does it feel to be back in France and not have to see people wearing shorts to restaurants?
Well, I didn't go to any restaurants since I came back, but it's funny that one of our viewers sent me a picture of Alessandro Del Piero walking down the street with shorts, and he said, what do you think about that? I said, well, he's in the park. And that's fine by me. Well, it's funny that that story was going to stay forever. And again, it's all again in restaurants that I don't agree. Otherwise, you can have shorts. I wear shorts, you know, to go on the beach, for sure.
I've heard that before from some Europeans, you know, where I've seen someone in shorts and they said, you've got to wear trousers to a restaurant. You can't wear shorts. Would you go to a restaurant in shorts, Stevie?
Not a chance. when we moved to America... Friends of ours came over about 2 months after we got here. And so we decided that we were going to go for a meal. So we went out, had no plans, didn't book anything. We're driving around, went into a place called Framingham in Mass, saw this nice restaurant, walked in, sat down, and then we realised everybody in there had shorts, sandals, T-shirts. We were all dressed. I had a suit and tie on. My mate had a suit and tie. The girls had all their bags and all their...
Yeah.
We were just sat like that. I mean, you talk about sticking out like a sore thumb. We had to get up and go. We couldn't sit there. Everybody was staring at us as if we were like aliens or something.
And how do you dress now when you go to the restaurant?
Oh, shorts, T-shirts, sandals.
See, there's the shorts.
You name it.
Roger says, Stevie, have you followed up on your no-beer diet now that England didn't win the Euros?
Oh, well, as far as I was aware, the bet was that if they won it, I didn't drink beer. Is that not the way it was?
I can't remember the bet.
So the answer to that would be, I'm still drinking beer, thankfully.
Okay. I'm being told that you said you would give up beer for a month if it meant that England wouldn't win. So have you given up beer for a month, Stevie?
No. 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 Well, I had to celebrate for a start, right? Because he got beat. So how am I going to do that with a beer?
Fair enough.
Not possible.
Dan the Orange Man says, after Bonucci said that England fans booing the national anthem inspired Italian players, were you ever motivated by opposition fans' antics? Frank?
Yes, and I talked about that with a friend of mine. I explained that I was very sad about that because I took the example of the Premier League, for example, saying that the fans, they really care about their team. They don't care about the opponent. They don't boo the opponent. It's what I like about the English football. And when I saw the fans booing the national anthem of the opponents, and not only Italy, I think it happened to Denmark before, I said, well, they became like us. They became like French, Italian, Spanish, you know, taking care of the others, making sure they're mocking the others, and they're not there anymore. But we have to tell them that somebody who was booing my national anthem, was booing me, gave me the strength really to get better and to show them or to tell them to shut up.
Paul Mara, he always used to tell me that whenever he played against Scotland at Hampden, he loved it because he got doubled down, because he loved our anthem. He loved listening to the bagpipes. Because it used to be Scotland the Brave, but there's no words to it, just the bagpipes. So you'd have 100 pipers behind you with the drummers playing it. And he said, I used to stand and he said, I loved it. He said, and what I liked even more was when they played the English national anthem, there's 80,000 Scots boo, and he said, I thought that was fantastic. He said, that got me going even more.
But you know what, you can understand this, maybe the Scottish and the English, because it's more of a rivalry, but don't you think it's a bit daft to be booing a national anthem against other countries where there isn't that rivalry?
Well, yeah, because I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
It just seems a bit Odd.
Seems a bit odd.
I get it with the English one, though.
Stevie...
Because I did it.
Fair enough. I think you still do, right?
Absolutely.
Harry says, Stevie, how much did the overhype and arrogance of British pundits affect the English team in terms of pressure put on them, especially a young team?
I actually think for once that the pressure from outside was about as minimal as it possibly could be. I know for a fact that previous teams have been overwhelmed with the media and the papers and everything else, but I think Southgate, if there's one thing that he absolutely did well, he shielded the players from all the outside kerfuffle that was going on, particularly from the semi-final to the final. So I don't think there's any way possible, for once, that you could say England not winning the Euros had anything to do with the media whatsoever, which you couldn't say in the past.
What do you think, Jules?
Yeah, I agree with Stevie. Stevie's right. This is the best relationship we've seen between English media, and that includes television and pundits, but also the tabloids, especially radio, everything you want, and the English national team. You know, for the past 25 years, maybe all the way back to Sir Bobby Robson in Italia 1990. But after that, there was so much animosity, so much tensions between media and players, media and the national team, media and whoever was the England head coach. And now Southgate has like pacified all of it. There was a much healthier relationship between everyone, and certainly that played a big part. And I don't know if pundit in England being overconfident that they could win the final had some sort of impact, but certainly what helped a lot this England team is that there were no tensions like there used to be in the past.
Next in for you, Frank, Rahul Yadav says, hypothetically speaking, if Man City sign Harry Kane and Chelsea sign Haaland, who do you think has a better chance of winning the league?
even if I respect like crazy my former club, I still think that Manchester City is ahead in terms of players to win the Premier League still. I think Chelsea had a great season in Champions League, but they have to work more on consistency of some players to make sure they can fight with Manchester City, and even I think maybe Liverpool next season. We're gonna go back hopefully to a normal season and see the best team from 2 years ago coming back as the best team now. So it's going to be hard for Chelsea. No, now having Haaland, if they have Haaland, it's a big plus. I don't know for Manchester City having Kane, because Guardiola showed us that many times he played without any strikers, so it's going to be new for him, even if he had two fantastic strikers with Jesus and Aguero. But I think it will make Manchester City more complete, and having Haaland will make Chelsea much better.
Stevie, you look a little bit uncomfortable in your seat. Is that because we're talking about Man City and Chelsea winning the league next season?
No, I changed my mind quickly.
Right.
Because I thought Man City have been... If we look at last year, Man City won the league because they were fantastic at the back and fantastic going forward. Previous years, they won the league just being fantastic going forward. They've let in goals. And then I thought about Chelsea, and I thought, well, Chelsea have been fantastic defensively, but they've been questionable. They talk about a team that misses a goal-scoring centre-forward. It's got Chelsea written all over it. So initially I thought, you know what, Chelsea would be fantastic. But then I thought, you know what, Man City, been there, done it, seen it, and then you're going to stick Harry Kane on the top. So I think the answer would be City, but my goodness, Chelsea would be a different ball game with Haaland up front.
Oh yeah, what a season that could be ahead. Back to you, Frank, from Ezio, who says, Deschamps has been very criticised for his lack of tactics for the 2020 Euro. If you were to be the head of the very talented French squad, what things would you have done differently?
Well, it's easy to talk after, and I want to give credit to Didier Deschamps on what he's done before. I mean, Now, going back to the last game where they play at three at the back, that it was a big story. All the media say, well, that's a Didier Deschamps mistake. We are talking about three at the back, playing for one for Real Madrid, the other one for Paris Saint-Germain, and the last one was Lenglet playing for Barcelona. I thought those three guys could have dealt, especially when France were leading 3-1, 10 minutes before the end of the game, the extra time. Well, not the game, the normal game. So there is no excuses whatsoever for the players who are on the field to not keep that that advantage. You can talk about Deschamps, how he wanted to play, if it was three at the back or four at the back. For me, there is no excuse for the players, you know. We talked about England as well, you know. They played too defensively. After 2 minutes, the right back sent a cross for the left back who scored the goal in the final. It's up to the players what they're gonna do on the field to animate the game. If they don't want to attack, there's nothing you can do. Again, England, after 20 minutes, they gave up, they lost the game. But if you are 11 defenders and you attack, you can score goals. We were very defensive in 98. We finished the best attack with a striker not scoring a goal. We scored 16 goals. I think it's quite an answer for that.
A very nice answer for that. This one for you, Jules. Francisco Tondo says, is Florentino Perez under enough fire to resign due to the leaked audios insulting players and managers alike? They just keep on coming out.
They keep coming out and they keep getting better and better, by the way. Well done to El Confidencial, who are the ones revealing the leaks, to make them so compelling and so like, wow, what's the next one? Because they get better and better. I mean, the one on Mesut Ozil today were just fantastic. The answer, I don't know if the viewer who sent the questions is a Florentino fan or not, or Real Madrid fan or not, but there's no way, no chance that Florentino is going to resign or anything like this. I'm not even sure he cares that much. To be fair, I mean, he cares because I don't think he's nice and it's not a good look, etc. But he's above that. I mean, he was re-elected on April the 13th, and he's not. That's not going to change anything. This was in 2006, going into 2012. So this is a long time ago we're talking, and I don't think that would impact him in that job at all whatsoever. It can impact his image from the outside world, of course, and all of that, but nothing other than that.
Jules, I missed that one. I heard all the Figo stuff.
We can't repeat it on air, that's the problem.
Oh, can we not?
I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
But let's just say it wasn't favourable.
Okay.
And we won't say, but what have you made of it all, Frank?
I just want to know why now. You know, is it because he was in kind of the leader of the Super League movement and some people want him to pay back what he tried to do to football? Some of the recording are from very far back back then, like 2006. I don't know why it comes out now. So I don't know Mr. Perez. I don't want to judge him. I don't know where the media wants to go. It's nice episode because it's quite funny, because he's crashing all the players that he bought. And so it doesn't make any sense, especially to some players that I played against and definitely were absolutely fantastic players, and he's saying that they're very bad. But I don't know where that story is going to go to and what's going to happen after the end of that. But it's funny for us, embarrassing for Mr. Perez, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Lastly, guys, I'll go around all of you. Peter Diaz asks, British Grand Prix this weekend on ESPN. Have you been to Silverstone to watch the race? What about you, Jules?
Never. I would love to. I've driven past many times, but I've never been. I've never been to any Formula One Grand Prix. I would love to go to Silverstone. I mean, Monaco would be my ultimate dream, of course. Maybe I can borrow your husband's nan's flat and go to Monaco and watch the Grand Prix there. But Silverstone would do. Even the French Grand Prix would anything. I would love to be there one day.
She does actually rent it out when it comes to that. But I tell you'll need some Griezmann type wages for that, for what they can rent it out for. Frank, what about you? Have you lapped it up in a VIP lounge watching the F1?
I never had that chance, unfortunately. But I was raised close to Le Castellet, which at the time was the Grand Prix de France. I don't know, I think it's going to come back very soon. And I wanted to be a pilot when I was young. I was spying on the rich little guys who had a chance to have a seat, but I never had the chance to see any Formula One Grand Prix. No, even being invited. Maybe one day we'll see. I'm crazy about race, but I've never been to Silverstone. No.
Yeah, well, just putting it out there, these guys wouldn't mind little tickets. Stevie, surely you've been.
Does my brother count?
Yes, it does. It seems as though these guys haven't been.
Right. Well, that's a yes then. Yeah, he used to go once a year because he's working. He's got a family, the whole thing. So he would go once a year. He's been to Silverstone. And then every year he would go to the Monaco Grand Prix or just travel around Europe once a year and go and see it. He absolutely loves it. He thinks football is the most boring thing he's ever seen in his life.
It's a lot more glamorous, isn't it, the F1?
I couldn't watch it. Formula One, I tell you what, I turn the telly off. I can't watch it. Who's watching?
Yeah, but it's going to be on ESPN.
It's like
trying to swallow.
We love it. We love watching it on ESPN. And that means that those who want to send tickets can just send them to me, to Jules, and to Frank, and we'll happily take them.
Don't forget Craig.
Yes,
Craig, can come too then.
Craig loves
Stevie's
it.
Place.
Get tickets as well.
Listen, I'll be back on here tomorrow. We'll see you next one fan. And ESPN FC is available.
A lap 346. There's only 400 laps left. Yeah.